This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Hello and welcome to the program, UFO Warning. Today's topic, men in green. That's correct, men in green. Specifically, we're talking about Army green. Before I get right to the point, this revolves around what happened at Roswell to the witnesses reportedly by Army personnel, men in the military, men in green uniforms, however you want to put it. What happened to those witnesses? How they were threatened, how they were intimidated, and how the deep state, even back over 60, 65, 70 years ago now, began to form that narrative at the expense of eyewitnesses. Now, I kind of got back on this because I was flipping around the YouTube channels, cruising around online, and I saw that the History Channel had come up with another special on Roswell, this time involving Jesse Marcel's supposed diary that he had kept at that time, contemporaneous notes. Sounded pretty interesting, sounded like it could be something pretty eventful, but spoiler alert, I just watched a little bit of the program. I'm sorry I can't dedicate an hour to a History Channel program pretty much these days until it hits YouTube and I can basically blank out all the ads, of which there are plenty. But I have to tell you, not that impressed. It seems like every time the History Channel comes up with one of these potentially groundbreaking discoveries, whether they're chasing moonshine in the Appalachians or digging for gold on an island off the East Coast somewhere, or, please help me, trying to find more of the Templar stuff somewhere in Utah. It's always the big lead up, and then when you get right to it, it seems like it's always the big letdown. Although I have to say, this is not a letdown so much in its own way because of the weird way things turned out. But first, I just want to get to this, to the promo I found on Live Science. And you can find links to the documents that we talk about or the articles. You can find those at ufowarning.com. Now, I have to tell you, I'm a little disappointed because, you know, we're averaging about 10 or 20 people a day visit the site, and I put the links up there, and it's a lot of work, and it's kind of fun, but, you know, any given podcast can get a download of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 downloads, which is, you know, decent for me. But it seems like even after 4,000 downloads on a podcast, you might get a couple dozen visits to the website. So go on over to UFO Warning, check it out, and you can at least go to the links and go back and see what we're talking about here. Now, the first article comes from LiveScience.com. It says, Army Officer's Secret Journal could offer new clues about the UFO crash. And then it's got a picture of Mr. Marcel here, that famous one where he's bent over and he's got this, it looks like someone's just thrown some sheets of tinfoil at the poor guy. Obviously, he's not ready for a picture to be taken. Looks like a really, like a setup deal, actually. But there's a mobile banking picture. And here we go. It says, a long hidden diary belonging to a U.S. intelligence officer has rekindled research into the Roswell incident. The infamous UFO crash in Roswell, New Mexico that took place more than 70 years ago. When a mysterious object slammed into the desert near the Roswell Army Airfield in July 1947, Major Jesse Marcel, an RAAF intelligence officer, was sent to supervise collection of the debris. A press officer at the RAAF issued a statement on July 8th describing, quote, the crash and recovery of a flying disc, unquote, which many interpreted as evidence of alien contact. But the next day, another Army official told reporters that RAAF officers had recovered a weather balloon, not a flying saucer. Now, that's the kind of pattern that we would see happen over and over again in the last 70 years. Usually there's not evidence, actual physical evidence of a UFO crash, but you have this, you know, you have multiple eyewitnesses. They report what they saw. The truth gets out for a little bit, and then the debunking squad shows up. And in this case, the debunking squad reportedly contained some World War II vets, which were people that you might really not want to mess with. Now, the article goes on, and it says, newspaper photos showed Marcel posing with pieces of what appeared to be a shredded high-altitude weather balloon with the radar reflector. But in the decades since, many have speculated about the military's initial flying disc report, wondering if the wreckage was perhaps more unusual than the photos implied. Recently, Marcel's family revealed that he had kept a diary from that period that might contain clues about the crash, sparking a new investigation by the History Channel in Roswell, the First Witness, part of the network's History's Greatest Mysteries series. It says the government claimed they had recovered a UFO. They had a press release about it, said Ben Smith, a former CIA operative and the show's lead investigator. No government in the world has said we have a spacecraft. And then the next day, there's another press release that says, never mind, it was just a weather balloon, Smith told Life Science. The show reveals the Roswell crash site, incorporating aerial surveys and mapping and using multispectral imaging to detect microdepression in the ground that could indicate where debris landed, Smith said. But the central component of the new inquiry is a diary which Marcel supposedly kept during the time of the Roswell crash, and it is now in the possession of his grandchildren. Decades after the event, Marcel told an interviewer that he believed the object that crashed in the New Mexico desert had extraterrestrial origins, according to Time reported in 1997. Analysis of the diary, translation of its cryptic language, could reveal coded messages that Marcel wrote about the crash at the time that it happened, Smith said. Okay, I'm going to interject here. If you go to the website ufowarning.com and you just watch that 6 or 7 minute excerpt from the History Channel show, they show actual pictures of what they're calling a diary. I don't even know if I'd call it a journal, actually. What's weird about it is the diary basically consists of two parts, and half, you know, maybe for a year or so leading up to 1947. And it's written in kind of, from what I can tell, very difficult to read, cursive. And it just seems to be random stuff. I don't even know. It's not like it's a diary. Dear diary, today I found a spaceship crashed in the desert. It's nothing like that. And then after 47 or so, not that far after what this would have happened, the handwriting is totally different. It goes from this kind of, you know, a little hard to read cursive into this very almost childlike block lettering, okay? It's almost like something written in the hand of a third or fourth grade kid, almost. And one of the people in that video clip that I have linked there from the History Channel at ufowarning.com, he makes the comment that it almost looks like a collection of sayings that somebody got out of Reader's Digest. And I think that's very astute. And they're just, you know, stuff like, you know, not to be exact, but, you know, like, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, and that kind of stuff. Just stuff scribbled in there. And I'm looking at this, and I'm like, Is this something that was written by somebody who maybe had a mild nervous breakdown at some point? Because what's he trying to tell us? We know as soon as they came out with the History Channel and said, look, oh, we've got Jesse Marcel's diary, this could blow the case wide open. I knew that was total crap. This guy was an intelligence officer, okay? So he knew what would happen if he said something that he wasn't supposed to say. And so there's no way I believe for one second that Jesse Marcel kept a separate diary somewhere, you know, just to blow the whole thing wide open and tell us how he had been threatened or intimidated or whatever. He was smarter than that. It wouldn't make sense for him to put himself in danger by writing anything down. I mean, he might be able to make a comment or two when he got to be 80 years old or however old he was. But at the time, you know, especially as an intelligence officer in the U.S. military, there's no way in the world I couldn't imagine he would be that careless to endanger himself by writing down things that he had saw, especially if it was in his capacity as a military officer. So I think there was a lot of hype as far as that goes, as far as I'm putting this out there. But what I do think was kind of underplayed from what little bit I've seen is, it looks to me like if this was his journal, as what I wouldn't call it a diary, but if this was his journal, which he'd written things down, and I think it probably was, I think that the story here is not that he wrote down a first-hand account of finding that spacecraft or those aliens out in the desert. The story, because he didn't. The story here is, look at the man's handwriting. It's like a normal, you know, fairly young man in the prime of his life. I mean, steady cursive writing like you would expect from the time. Some of the journal entries are just mundane stuff. I mean, maybe he was making notes to himself or whatever. But then after the crash, look at the handwriting. It goes, and like I said, you can go to ufowarning.com and you can look at that video and look at the handwriting. See what you think. I see the steady hand written with a right-hand slant, you know, and cursive. I mean, well, you know, it looks like it was written by somebody who was in their right mind. And then I see this block letter stuff written, just like, it's like something a kid would write in primary school.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Why did he regress so much in his handwriting style? That's the part that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever in this thing. I don't get it. And I think I really almost feel like the History Channel has missed the boat a little bit from that point of view. Now, I came across another article here getting to the alleged intimidation. Now, they did bring this up a little bit in what little I watched of the actual short documentary or whatever. And I mean, I know some of you are going to say, well, how can you criticize something if you didn't even watch the whole thing? Listen, it's a History Channel. I don't need to watch 45 minutes of shaky camera angles and made-up experts to know what they're talking about. You can watch the... You can just watch the synopsis on this and you know exactly what you're getting into, okay? And this is typical History Channel stuff. It's interesting for about 5 minutes. But another part that I found interesting was, and this is old ground, it's been covered many, many times, and of course it's History Channel, so they use some old clips they piled together. But multiple witnesses to that thing came out later and were reported to have been intimidated by U.S. Army officers. And the one cowboy, the rancher, it escapes my name. If you ever watched the documentary of it that HBO did, Dwight Yoakam played the cowboy. It was freaking awesome. And as he's leaving the radio station, you know, he's supposed to go back to the radio station, give the guy their firsthand account. Well, in between, he got a visit from the U.S. Army, spent a couple days in interrogation, and decided to change his story. And as he's leaving to go get into his brand new pickup truck, the guy asks him something about the little green men, and he turns and he says, well, they weren't green. And I thought that part was just so perfect, and I could just see how that would be so true. The army comes in, it's a small rural town, they basically just approach the eyewitnesses, and whether they have to buy them off or threaten them, they put a cap on the story. You have to remember, this is 1947. I mean, most people don't even make a long-distance phone call, let alone have access to the internet. Now, this next article came from openminds.tv, and it's from a while. It says here, August 10th, 2020. It says, a survival at Roswell, the truth about the one that walked away. And then it says, Don Schmidt has been one of the primary investigators of the alleged crash of a UFO in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. He and his colleagues have tracked down hundreds of witnesses who claim to have information about what happened. When putting together the Roswell UFO crash issue of Open Minds magazine in 2011, we asked Don to write us an article on the best evidence that an actual pilot of the alleged spaceship survived. The following is the article he provided for the magazine. And then it has the article listed here before. It says, eyewitness account, Dan Dwyer, D-W-Y-E-R. In 1947, Frankie Dwyer Rowe, a 12-year-old girl, witnessed her father being threatened and warned by the military authorities. Now, you can find multiple videos of this gal on YouTube. They were done maybe 10, 20 years ago, where she talks about Army officers coming to the house, threatening her father, explaining to him that him and his whole family would be killed, basically, and buried out in the desert. Now, it says here, her father, now deceased, was a crew chief of the Roswell Fire Department at the time of the incident, when the call came into the fire station that there had been an airship crash north of town. Dan Dwyer and Lee, I'm having a little trouble here, the writing on this is extremely tiny, and Lee Ware were dispatched with the sheriff, and a couple of the deputies were also following up the rear in fast pursuit. Arriving just after the military would secure the scene, Dwyer and Reese were witness something totally unexpected. It wasn't an airplane at all, but an egg-shaped vessel of some sort that they did not recognize. Well, this, of course, is the flying saucer that crashed at Roswell. It says, and the bodies, Dwyer could see three diminutive humanoid beings lying in the lee of the craft with his focus riveted on the craft and the bodies on the ground. Dwyer noticed a movement out of the corner of his eye. There, watching in front of him, seemingly from out of nowhere, was something right out of a science fiction movie. According to the fireman, it was about the size of a 10-year-old child with grayish skin, no hair, and a large head and eyes. Within moments, the roar of the approaching vehicles could be heard as the military finally took charge of the entire affair. So here we have this fire department basically being called out to what they thought was an airplane wreck. They show up with the sheriff and the fire department. They get to the wreck, and here are these three bodies in this craft. And, of course, the one alien was still alive. That was the one they talked about being up walking around. Well, it didn't take long for the U.S. military to show up, and that's when things changed a little bit. It says the two firemen were escorted away from the immediate area and warned of the consequences if they should ever speak of the incident. To further demonstrate the seriousness of what was witnessed, the family were paid a visit by military police that they were that evening at their home. It says Dwyer and his wife were physically threatened and were told that authorities would kill their children should they utter a word about what was witnessed earlier that day. Now remember, this is 1947, 2 years after World War II had ended. And you know, it might be hard for people today to imagine U.S. Army personnel showing up and threatening to kill somebody over a UFO. But think about the context this was in. We just had the whole scandal with the Soviet Union stealing secrets involving the atomic bomb program. Secrecy was a big deal. And this is in the Southwest, right where this stuff's going down at. And they're dealing with Army vets that were quite possibly combat vets. They'd seen a lot of killing, probably did a lot of killing. So when the U.S. Army, if they did so, sent them out to tell the local civilians not to say anything on the threat of death, because as far as they were concerned, it would be treason to allow to let these state secrets out. I think people did pay attention, and I could really actually believe that that happened. It says the Roswell incident left an impact on all those involved, especially then Roswell Sheriff George Wilcox, and just before Wilcox's widow Inez passed away, she related the story to her granddaughter, Barbara, who's since passed on the story. It says the event shook George. He never wanted to be sheriff again after that. My grandfather said, "Don't tell anybody," when the incident happened. The military police came to the jailhouse and told George and I that if we told anybody that if everything about the resident that we would be killed, but our entire family would be killed. So here they go. They've gone to the jailhouse where the sheriff works with his wife, and they threaten to kill him and his whole family. This is pretty scary stuff when you think about it, and you can understand why so much of this stuff has lost. And what other times, you know, how many other cases of UFOs sightings occurred where maybe there was a crash evidence or crash retrieval, and the same things happened, but we don't know about it because people never said anything. Now, another case here says Sergeant Homer G. Rauwiff. Sergeant Homer G. Rauwiff, Jr. was a member of the 603rd Air Engineer Squadron at the RAAF in 1947. He was a career military man and retired as an NCO after 26 years of dedicated service to the country. Before passing away, it says, in March of 1988, he finally conveyed to his son, Larry, the following startling information about his involvement with the crash of the flying saucer. Wirewith was part of a cleanup detail sent to the crash site north of Roswell. Larry was told that his father had seen everything. He handled the memory metal, which, according to Homer, was thin foil that kept in shape. If it wasn't enough, then it says, was part of the claim that handled the metal, and then it says, Larry was told that his father, and he was seeing everything, and he handled the memory metal, which, according to Homer, was thin foil that kept in shape. If it wasn't enough, he described the actual ship, which was somewhat circular. He also caught his son completely by surprise when he announced, "I saw three little creatures. They had large heads, and at least one was alive." Wow. Now, this article goes on here. It has multiple witnesses listed, each of them telling about what they saw. And it goes into great detail about what they saw. And you know, here's the thing. When you see a case like this, and you have one or two witnesses, that's one thing. But when you have 10, 12, 20, or maybe 100 witnesses, and they're all describing a similar event, maybe the details aren't all exactly the same, but it's all these independent eyewitness accounts, and it all fits together like a jigsaw puzzle. And people can ask, well, if something like that happened Why didn't it get out? Well, we know why it didn't get out, because it happened in a very secluded part of the country. It happened near a large military base. And even back then, the deep state may not have been as mature as it is today, but they put their assets to work quite clearly by having these men go around in uniform. Maybe they weren't even soldiers, maybe they weren't even actual army officers, but they at least pretended to be. And under the cover of this authority, it seems quite likely that they did in fact threaten people, and that's why people stayed quiet about it for so many decades afterwards. To me, that's the real story. The real story that the History Channel just kind of touches on but doesn't really delve far enough into. It's not about whether or not Jesse Marcel had a diary. It's not about whether there's a secret account left written somewhere. It's about how the people that claim to be our government react when something like this happens. And honestly, even though this has been 73 years ago, to me, the way our government reacts, the way the deep state reacts to the UFO phenomena, to what presents itself to us right now, is not in an open way centered on disclosure, but they're acting the same way they did 70 years ago. Now, they may not be able to use brute force the way they did back then. Well, I'm sure they can, but they might not be quite so open about it. But they're certainly able to use deception. They're certainly able to use all of their powers to keep things secret. And, you know, yet again this week, I'm going through the Twitter accounts and I'm seeing people make comments, you know, that, well, perhaps Trump is going to go ahead and tell us all what he knows about UFOs. Perhaps we're going to get some more disclosure. Look, we're talking about a guy that's been in office for 4 years and can't even get disclosure on things that he ordered disclosure on. You know, he was supposed to give us disclosure on John F. Kennedy. We couldn't even get that out of him. So that tells you how tight a control that the deep state has over information that they want to keep under wraps. And here we see this happening with Roswell 70 years later. And we're just now scratching the surface of what people saw and how people were threatened not to talk about what they saw. Who knows how many secrets those people took to their graves with them that prevented us from having even a basic understanding of what happened out there 70 years ago. So, in conclusion, as far as the History Channel documentary goes, yeah, I suppose it's good entertainment. I link to it, like I said, at the webpage UFOwarning.com, and you can take a look at that diary / journal, whatever, see what you think about it. I think the History Channel is doing what it's good at, and that is disseminating information to a lot of people who have an interest in UFOs, but really aren't into it at a very serious level. And that's okay, because it brings those people kind of into the tent to where they can begin to discuss things. On the other hand, sometimes when we watch these very slickly produced UFO documentaries, whether it's on the History Channel or some other YouTube, wherever, sometimes the most important thing is not the primary thing they're showing us. Like in this case, did Jesse Marcel leave a written account of what he actually saw out there in the desert? Sometimes the most important stuff is what's just under the surface. In this case, you know, what's going on with this guy's diary? Why is the handwriting so altered from before the sighting to after the sighting? What happened to this guy? What kind of psychological pressure was he under? I mean, how badly was he threatened? And then we can expand that. What happened to these other witnesses? What happened to them? I mean, what kind of bad things were threatened against these people? What kind of bad things were done to these people to force them to not talk about what they saw? So you see, we can start out by maybe enjoying a UFO documentary, but what that does is it opens up a lot of other questions that are still unanswered after 70 years. Until next time, this is UFO Warning, over and out.